Hanselminutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 365, recorded live Thursday, March 28th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Steve Sanderson about PhoneGap Cordova.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we've got Steve Sanderson on the line. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
Lovely. Congratulations. You just put out an iPhone application.
I did, yes. It's been something I've been wanting to do for a couple of years, but I haven't really had a good opportunity, and I decided that that's never going to happen, actually. I just need to stay up really late and do it anyway.
Well, you're a pretty impressive guy, and you've done a lot of interesting stuff. I know that you're a web person, and I know that you're the author of Knockout, but I did not know that you knew Objective-C, which means that I'm a horrible person because you know all the languages now.
I'm not sure that it would make me a better person to know Objective-C, actually. I'd be quite scared of a version of me that was into that kind of stuff. I have been sticking with my favorite web technologies, and I have built this iPhone app using PhoneGap, which gave me a good opportunity to put Knockout to use in a different kind of application, and also to use a backend in the cloud, which relates to a product I work on at Microsoft. So it was cool, actually, to be able to use a lot of technologies that I'm involved in developing and turn them into something fun.
So how about a little background for folks who may be web developers but don't know what PhoneGap is and don't know what Knockout is?
Okay, sure. Knockout is a model view view model library for JavaScript. So it basically provides a nice way of architecting rich JavaScript applications so that you can separate up your code into views, which are nice and simple and declarative, and view models, which are nice and object-oriented and self-contained, and bind them together. So it's kind of one of a current generation of model view libraries that are becoming very popular among web developers. You find that at knockoutjs.com, and I think a lot of people have heard of it, but if you haven't, then there are interactive tutorials and such there. PhoneGap, I would imagine that probably just about everyone has heard of it, but just to kind of make sure everyone's clear about what it is, it's a way of packaging a web application so that it can be submitted to mobile app stores and marketplaces. So you write HTML and JavaScript and CSS, and as long as it doesn't directly depend on loading pages from a server, then it's just static files, then it can be packaged up into this artifact that gets submitted.
And does it use JavaScript to call functions that are native functions?
So the idea with PhoneGap is that you will structure the majority of your user interface with familiar HTML and CSS. And at runtime, PhoneGap is providing a sort of a Chrome-less browser. By Chrome-less, I mean there's no sort of, URL bar or anything like that. It's just the sort of surface of the browser. So the user using it doesn't know it's a browser, particularly if you style it to look like a native app. But it is effectively a browser. Yes, you would use JavaScript and CSS and everything else that you are familiar with as a web developer to structure your application. And you wouldn't normally be using native controls, although it is to some extent possible to use native controls from your platform. It's a bit difficult, but it can partly be done.
And is this is this real, or is this a pale kind of simulacrum of what an application would look like? I wonder if this is a legitimate way to write an app and try to, I wouldn't say fool, but definitely give the user the expectation of native speed and quality.
Well, it's very often a criticism that's brought up. In fact, you can barely go a week before there's some sort of Hacker News post about comparing native and web mobile apps. It's a big debate. I think generally people are of the opinion that for sort of ultimate perfection, then yeah, native apps do come with some advantages in the sense that they come with all the built-in controls for your platform, so they're kind of going to look perfect by default. And of course, those controls and the implementation is all optimized for the hardware that the stuff is running on. So in a sense, it may seem like using HTML and CSS to try and simulate that is a bit of a cheap trick that's never going to quite be as good. But I don't think that really truly expresses the reality of it. So this application that I've been working on, which I've just put out a blog post with a video in, I think that most people who tried it would agree that it looks and feels basically the same as a native app. So I just had to write a bunch of CSS in order to get the same appearance and the same kind of transitions that appear in native iOS apps. And the net result, I'm pretty confident any normal person would not consider for a minute, is not a native app. It just, you know, a normal person just would never think that it's different to any of the other apps that are running on their phone. So I'm confident that it's possible to achieve basically the same level of fluidity and richness. But in some ways, there's more work involved in doing it because you have to actually implement the appearance of all your controls yourself. But on the other hand, you save a load of time because you don't have to learn some new language and new UI frameworks. So if you are going to write a project that's really intends to share code across multiple platforms, you know, if you're going to target Android, iOS, and Windows Phone, then really developing your application from scratch in three different languages, three different UI frameworks is probably so inefficient that taking the time to replicate the UI that you want in HTML and CSS is quite a reasonable alternative.
But surely there's existing CSS that gives you the buttons, and the, I mean, you're not literally trying to make pixel perfect versions of iPhone buttons yourself.
That's up to you. Now, my objectives for my app was, because it was partly experimental, I really wanted to see if I can genuinely create something that was exactly like native. So I did actually create all of my UI elements completely from scratch, because that gave me like total control over how everything looks. But if you are more inclined just to get stuff done, then there are frameworks that you can take. So I would probably, of the available ones, recommend looking at Sentia Touch. That seems to be pretty much the leading option in terms of producing a good user experience. But obviously people have also heard of jQuery Mobile, which tries to do a similar thing.
On my website, I can say add to home screen and then pin it. And when I run it, though, I pull it down and I see that I'm running in Safari. So it's really just a bookmark, full screen bookmark. This PhoneGap/Cordova is a shell of its own?
Yes. So it is a native app as far as the phone is concerned. So it's installed just like every other native app. You get it from the marketplace or app store or whatever. It just so happens that the implementation is that when it starts up, it starts a web browser control that takes up the whole screen with no address bar or anything. And then your pages, which are bundled with the app, show up in there. So, yeah, as far as the phone is concerned, it's not just a bookmark to a website. It is an actual app. It's just that the implementation happens to be with web technologies.
When PhoneGap first came out, I pretty much understood it and I felt pretty good about it. But then somehow people started saying Cordova instead of PhoneGap. And this might be really, I mean, I know the PhoneGap guys will listen and I'll get an email from them afterwards. But as soon as that name happened, then I became a little bit confused and I was just like, okay, I don't know what's going on over there. Those guys haven't got their thing yeah. together. I'm going to wait and find out what happens because I don't know the difference between the two, nor should I be asked to know the difference. Please explain to me why there are two names.
All right. Yeah. It's weird, but basically the project was always called PhoneGap when it was originally created by a company called Nitobe. And then they transferred the ownership over to the Apache Foundation. And as part of that, they needed a new name that was not at risk of infringing any trademarks. So they came up with various alternative names. They were calling it Callback at one stage, which was a ridiculous name because you can't search the web for that without getting all kinds of unrelated things. And eventually they decided that they would call the technology Cordova. And that the inspiration for that came from the fact that Nitobe were based on Cordova Street in Vancouver. But anyway, that's kind of irrelevant. They came up with calling it Cordova. So now Cordova is the technology that's licensed by Apache. PhoneGap, on the other hand, is a particular distribution of Cordova from Adobe, and also ties in with other Adobe services like PhoneGap Build, which is a cloud-based build system for Cordova applications. So a good analogy would be to think that just like WebKit is the underlying technology for, let's say, Safari, which is a distribution of a web browser that includes WebKit, similarly, Cordova is the underlying technology which is distributed in a package called PhoneGap, if that makes sense.
I see. So like Chromium and Chrome.
Yeah, yeah, very much like that. Yeah. The only weird thing is that since PhoneGap is the only distribution of Cordova that exists, it's kind of nonsensical having the two different names.
Yeah, okay. So then for the most part, when I see the two names online, I can just mentally exchange them. It's not like one does one thing and one does the other.
Yeah, typically people just use them interchangeably without knowing why there are two names.
Okay. All right, well, this sounds like magical and wonderful, and we should all immediately drop what we're doing and start using PhoneGap to do all of our work, right?
I would say that for certain projects, it's the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, but for equally many projects, the reverse is true. So, I mean, I mentioned some of the advantages. I mean, the obvious, the fact that you get to use your web development skills and you don't have to learn new languages and UI frameworks. Other really compelling things. What I found when I was developing my app that was just amazingly wonderful was if I need a library to do something, I can just go on GitHub and there's like 58 bazillion JavaScript libraries on there, and I can just pull any one of them off and it's just going to work. It's wonderful. And in some ways, HTML and CSS are actually a better native UI framework. Better UI framework than the native alternatives for certain types of screens. Like something that's like a document is really easy to do in HTML, but it's very hard in certain native frameworks. Also, I just think that modern JavaScript code can be really nicely structured, and I can't really say the same for the kind of Objective-C code that I see commonly in the wild. There are tons of really good things, but it would be unfair to leave it at that because I would say that there are some massive drawbacks to this as well. Like, if your objective is to make an app that feels native, then, you know, you've got tons of extra work to do because you have to re-implement all of these standard controls and transitions and such using HTML and JavaScript. Unless you're going to just take an off-the-shelf implementation, but if you do that, then it's probably not going to really look and feel native. Another major drawback would be the fact that you can't really use mixed native controls in with your HTML user interfaces. Now you kind of can, like in my app, I use the native map control, but I had to design the UI in such a way that it didn't overlap with anything in an awkward way because it's kind of like I've just got the map and it's just overlaid at certain pixel coordinates on the screen, like independently of anything else. And so I line it up so that it looks like it's meant to be there, but, you know, it's sort of a bit hackish. Also, other drawbacks would be that you do have to think carefully about performance. Is possible to get really great performance and, you know, the wonderfully smooth animations with CSS transitions and such, but if you're not careful and if you use the wrong kind of animations, then performance can be pretty bad, particularly on older devices. Just like on when developing for the normal browsers, you have to be aware of cross-browser differences in PhoneGap, because let's say the Android browser is quite different to Safari on iOS, even though they're both based on WebKit, and then Windows Phone obviously is based on IE, which is different again. So you do have to start thinking about cross-browser stuff, and finally, If you want to use any APIs that are not exposed by PhoneGap, then you need to start writing some native code anyway. So you can't necessarily avoid having to do some native code unless you're writing a very limited app that only does things that PhoneGap has anticipated. So, yeah, I think there are quite a few drawbacks there. And if you are coming into a project and trying to decide whether this is right for you or not, I would suggest that if you are a web developer already and you're fairly confident in your JavaScript skills, and your project intends to target multiple platforms, like at least two out of Android, iOS, and Windows Phone, then perhaps on balance, PhoneGap is going to be a more efficient way of delivering your project than learning new languages and frameworks. On the other hand, if you're only trying to target one platform, or you don't already have very strong web development skills, then I think that it would probably be a pretty bad move to be trying to use these technologies. You can probably become moderately competent in building a native app with probably just a week or two's intensive reading of a book. And I think that amount of investment would probably outweigh the costs if you are only trying to target one platform.
Mm-hmm. What about data access? I mean, I understand how to call RESTful web services and how to move JSON around. And I'm assuming, I haven't looked a lot at Objective-C, but I'm assuming that it's pretty, you know, because JSON is so trivially moved in and out of JavaScript, because it is JavaScript, that, you know, this idea of serialization and deserialization just kind of goes away. So I'm assuming that there's literally no problem moving data from place to place. But my question is, what about storing it on the disk? I mean, surely you have some local cache. How do you have a local database and things like that?
Yeah, well, you've got quite a few options, actually, if you're using PhoneGap. So you can do the same stuff that the native developers do, which is to call into whatever native data storage libraries exist. So going with iOS again, there's something called Core Data, which is an ORM, basically, object relational mapper for saving data in a SQLite database. And PhoneGap exposes those APIs into your JavaScript code. So you can just, you know, call those directly and the data will get saved in the same way. But you're not limited to that, because since you're in a browser, you can also use things like local storage. And you can even use the HTML file system API to write files to disk in whatever custom format you want. And that last option is actually what I did in my application. So my data all exists in JSON format, which is stored in a backend in the cloud. But for maintaining a local cache, I just dump these JSON files as text files to the disk each time you change them. And then when the app starts up, I can load them from disk and carry on as before. I say disk, obviously, I mean, you know, flash storage or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then just carry on. So I didn't actually have to look at mapping my data into a relational database or anything. I'm just working with JSON blobs because it fits quite nicely into the structure of my application.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting technique that's probably worth digging into a little bit, because I've used and shown a number of demos that you've done. Like in my talk on mobile, I use your conference browser.
Oh, yeah.
And your single page conference browser, where you basically look at sessions and dates and people who gave them and abstracts and rooms, and we kind of pivot on that data. The demo that I give, you basically have one big JSON file, and then you use, if I remember correctly, underscore, which is kind of like link for JavaScript.
Might well have done. Yep. I don't remember exactly.
But well, I guess I'm bringing that up because it's such a clever and simple way to have a little database when the data is shaped a certain way.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good as an approach for the kind of apps that target consumers, typically, where the consumer's got their own data or there's some sort of reasonable boundary around all the data that a single individual is ever going to want to see. Because then you can roughly estimate that it's feasible to just drop it all in one big blob. Obviously, there are types of apps which it wouldn't be applicable for. Some like stock trading app where you've got to be able to search back through decades worth of financial records, or let's say the whole of Amazon.com. You wouldn't really want the entire catalog to exist in one giant JSON blob that all gets loaded into memory. But yeah, for those apps where the amount of data is bounded, then it's enormously convenient not to have to look at splitting it up into little pieces that can go into different tables and so on.
That is effectively what you did. I mean, you have this local single JSON file, or do you have a whole series of them?
So I, with my application, the app is, the principle of it is that the user wants to create lists of places that they like to go, and then they write reviews and add photos and give other pieces of information relating to the place. So I decided to split up the data on a per list basis. So for each list that you've got, which is, you know, a list might be like my favorite cafes in Bristol or something like that, each one of those is a separate file, a separate directory, and in that directory I drop all of the photos that you've uploaded and such. And the reason for splitting it up like that means that there is some level of scalability built into this. So if each individual list becomes so large that it starts to strain the kind of amount of stuff that you can load and save before performance starts hurting, then at least the performance doesn't depend on how many lists you've got in total. It just depends on the size of each individual list. But, you know, for every application, there would be some other reasonable kind of, I suppose domain-driven design people call it an aggregate route, you know, a kind of natural boundary around a group of related data where it's reasonable to say that that whole group changes as an atomic unit and is independent from other islands of data.
And the application is called TourALot?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so TourALot, TourALot. So if that's on the iOS App Store. So yeah, it's, definitely recommend checking it out and seeing what you think of how good or bad an HTML and JavaScript UI can be. I'm pretty pleased with that. I think most people who've seen it, who know about these things, have been very positive about how native-like it is. Certainly on recent devices like iPhone 4S and later, it's basically indistinguishable from native. Although on some older devices, like I've tried it on a 3GS, it's a bit sluggish, but you know, not unusably so. And I suppose people on those devices will probably find that most of their apps are a bit sluggish as well.
And the feedback has been positive. No one has called it out and said, "Hey, look at that. That's clearly not native." Or are people all assuming what I did, which is that Steve has learned Objective-C?
Well, whenever I've introduced it to people in person, I've been talking about the technologies. So I don't think anybody has, well, in my conversations, people have known what it is. But yeah, people have been very positive about it. And yeah, like I say, I think it genuinely is pretty close. Yeah, I think the argument that HTML and JavaScript can't compete on a pure user experience basis is not really correct, at least not for those applications that are basically forms and lists and that sort of thing. Now, obviously, when you get into games, mm-hmm. that's entirely different. And if you imagine some kind of ridiculously elaborate UI effects that don't map to any sort of CSS transitions or something, then native apps would obviously have a significant advantage there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always think about apps like Foursquare. And I think if you could write Foursquare in PhoneGap, then that would be a pretty amazing example of it can do anything.
I would have to find out what Foursquare app is like in order to...
You haven't seen the Foursquare app?
I'm sorry.
Because no. You use the example, like I guess there's probably not a lot of places to check in Bristol. But the...
It's just that I'm a highly antisocial person. So, you know, any of these social kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, your app has that very kind of classic iOS look.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the done button yeah. and the lists, and the lists pivot into square, you know, grids of photos, and then you can hold down the photos and then delete them. It's a very classic look. So I could definitely see that metaphor being extended. But then apps like Evernote or Foursquare or Twitter apps are all trying to just be a little different. They want to look like an iOS app, but they want to change their style And iOS itself is now, ironically, moving towards a flatter experience. People are saying that they're heading in the direction of flat design, kind of a la Metro design language. And I think that the Metro design language is kind of moving slightly towards the middle. So yeah, we're all going to find ourselves in this kind of slightly flat, slightly not middle place.
Yeah.
Hopefully PhoneGap will be able to make that happen for us. Is there a back end to this when I make a list?
Yes, there is. So the app is designed to work primarily offline, because if you're traveling around on your vacation or whatever and you making your list of things that you've seen, obviously you don't want to need some network connection. So everything by default is just working against your local storage. But the point of the app is that when you have built something, created some list of places that you're proud of, you want to share it with your friends. So there's a publish feature where it goes up into the cloud, and then effectively you've got a website that you can point people to, which shows them everything that you've created and your photos and that sort of thing. So naturally there has to be some kind of back-end service in order to actually store that data and to serve it up as a website. So the way I've done this involves a few components. Are you familiar with the term backend as a service?
Backend as a service, I mean, I think I am, but it couldn't hurt to tell the people too.
All right. So if you are loading and saving sort of pretty straightforward JSON data and you want to store it in a database and then query it back later and then do authentication, these are really ridiculously common requirements, like so common that it's, in other words, it's like every mobile app basically has to do this. And yet, even though it's so common, for a long time people were still just reinventing their own implementation of that from scratch every single time. So maybe they were using something like Web API or even Rails or some other kind of web technology that can accept JSON data and respond to HTTP requests. You know, it's a reasonable approach, but it's a lot of manual work to implement that from scratch. And also, you then have the responsibility of deploying it yourself, maintaining the whatever sort of hosting environment it's on, managing your own like security and that sort of thing. So in recent years, there's been a bit of a movement towards this backend as a service concept, which is where instead of inventing your own backend with Web API or Rails or whatever from scratch, you can just sign up to use one that already exists. And then you can configure it to say, oh, the data I want to store is going to be in this shape, and I want to use this kind of authentication, and I need to plug in a bit of custom server-side logic here, that sort of thing. So there's a bunch of different backend as a service products that are out there right now. People will probably have heard of parse.com. That's pretty well known. There's other things like Stackmob and others whose name I don't remember. Anyway, there is one from Microsoft, and it's called Windows Azure Mobile Services, and that's the project that I actually work on at the moment. So naturally, I wanted to have an opportunity of using that as a real user. So that is where your data all gets stored when you actually publish it from this app. And it's stored in exactly the same format that exists on the device, like a big load of JSON. And the backend also manages some handy things like authentication. So you can log in with Facebook, Twitter, Google, or Microsoft accounts. And I didn't actually have to write any code to make that happen, or at least I didn't have to write any code to interface directly with those providers, because that is a feature that's built into Azure Mobile Services. You just have to say that you want to use those authentication mechanisms, and then basically the client library deals with presenting the login UIs and everything. So there's a
PhoneGap UI plugin for this?
So we've just 2 weeks ago, or is it three now? I don't know. We released a web client library for Azure Mobile Services, which means that you can connect to it from any browser-based application or PhoneGap, since PhoneGap is effectively a browser application. And that means that your JavaScript can save data or query against these cloud data stores that you can configure, and also deals with the authentication. So, for example, if you want to make someone log in with Twitter, you just say client.login, pass the string Twitter, and then you get a callback. So the client library at that point will pop open a Twitter login UI, And when the user logs in, then it'll give you a callback to give you the authenticated Twitter user ID. And that is all validated on the server, obviously, with the proper cryptographical authentication headers. So, yeah, that's very convenient, and it's built into the client's library. So I was able to add that to my app pretty easily. And it supports arbitrary server-side scripts as well that you can write in JavaScript. So I have both my UI code and my server-side code in JavaScript, which is nice. And yeah, it works really well. I was pretty happy with that. Of all the things that I used in my project, that was probably one that gave me the least amount of difficulty.
Not because you wrote it.
I think the fact that I'm quite familiar with it probably helped, yeah.
And are you giving the code away to this, or is this going to be something that's going to be a weekend project and you'll keep it to yourself?
I'm not planning on open sourcing it at this point. I had this odd tension as I was working on it, because I have this sort of habit of making libraries and open source projects and stuff, and I was desperately trying not to create some new open source project with this, even though I kept thinking, oh, this is reusable, that's reusable, because I would have immediately got sidelined into implementing sort of 400 use cases that I didn't even have myself. And I was doing this, you know, at 2 a.m, and I just wanted to ship the thing. So, I'm resisting, the urge to, start releasing code and maintaining things. But I am actually just going to blog, a bunch of, posts about, the techniques that I've used in it. So if people do want to see some of the implementation and even reuse some of the code, then they'll be able to get it that way. But then at least I don't have to, you know, deal with people sending me issue reports and having to fix it and things like that.
Yeah, I think you've done a lot in open source. We don't need to ask you to do too much more. This is pretty cool. This is very exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing your post and reading about how you built this. The more detail, the better.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Brilliant. Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.